You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're, which is short for you are, listening to the Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is The Game, and I'm Chris from Rise of the Pleasure Planet.
And I'm James from Rise of the Pleasure Planet, also.
And I'm Blue from...
You're just visiting, right, Blue?
Well, actually, it's kind of rainy here lately, so I guess you could say Ferenginar at this time. And of course, I had to change that opening script for the teacher, who's been calling it out on us for several times now. Because you're...
But, Lou, this has been pointed out on numerous occasions. I thought you had edited it.
He edited it a month ago, right? When I was on last?
Yeah, I remember at the time it was like, clink, 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 press save.
Yes, yeah, exactly right. So, Chris, let's see. We had you last on for Darmok.
And Jalal de Tanagra.
Yes, and that was Chris and James in Battle Bridge. Although, you know, I do regret not trying that in that style. You know, doing the show like that
would have taken a while.
Metaphor. It would have like. It was. I started to do some, but I just couldn't come up with anything that made any sense. The Battle Bridge on Trek Podcast, or something, I don't know. But, Trekmate. But, anyway, Chris, good to have you on again. What's been happening with you? Are you doing summer school, or are you done?
I am done, except that I'm in a college course, so I'm not, like, working at summer school. I'm just taking a course myself. I got a new job. As a sixth grade teacher instead of a fifth grade teacher, teaching solely English and language arts. So they're making me take some courses to get ready for the style that they use.
Well, it's a good thing you corrected our work.
Yeah, I'm going to be correcting a ton of work now because I'll have three or four groups, I think, of 30 kids each. So I'll be doing lots of reading really crappy things and having to edit them. Or help edit them.
Right. You know, I remember when I was in high school at Central High here in Omaha, and we used to have to write themes, which is basically like book reports, only, much more involved. And I think our biggest thing was the Cliff's Notes, wasn't it? The Cliff's Notes was the biggest thing that we had at our disposal. But, you know, and I often wonder, as an English teacher, how do you guys know where this work came from and that they didn't actually read the book and do a report on it? They just kind of like copied from a website now.
So ideally, you don't just do like a one paper thing about a book. You have a discussion. Yeah. And so for a kid to truly invest in the discussion, they have to at least have read the Cliff Notes version, which, you know, I mean, that is what it is. I think you miss out a lot on nuance and theme, and so when you get into 6th, 7th grade and you start having to prove your point about why the theme is bravery is a good thing for people to have, you know, you have to have specific instances where the author shows that bravery is good, you know, and prove that it's not just that the author doesn't have something else in mind. So if the teacher has read what they are asking the students to read, then ideally you'll be able to suss out who's actually taking part in the reading when you have a discussion.
All right. Yeah. Teachers are pretty cool people. I keep trying to convince my daughter of that. But,
Some teachers are pretty cool people. Some teachers are the devil incarnate.
I don't know.
I'll let you decide which I...
Yeah. Which you might be? Yeah, we'll see.
So, okay. Chris, let me ask you a question. I don't know if I've asked this before, but as you were talking about now being like a full-time English teacher, it reminded me that when I was at school, one of my friends always decided just to write a whole load of Star Trek slash fiction and hand that in as creative writing. Have you come across that yet? And how would you mark it if you did?
I haven't, and it depends on how good the slash fiction was. did you nail the character voices? I don't think fan fiction is inappropriate. I think that some of the best fiction in the world is fan fiction. Tolkien was basically writing fan fiction. He was a huge fan of language. He was a huge fan of, you know, Beowulf and some of those ancient things. And he was a huge fan of his religion, and he kind of married all that together in his own little fan fiction, and it's one of the greatest sets of books in the world. So I think that fan fiction's a fine way to express yourself creatively.
To be honest, I think he was just a bit lazy, but I take your points, and I think it's really nice to have someone articulate on the show this week, Lou.
It's a good about time.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Wow, are y'all throwing shade at former guest hosts right now?
No.
The time we get any intelligence is when the guest host is there.
I kind of sent that over to you, and I thought you were just going to shout down what my friend used to do as some type of loser, and you actually made a very good valid point that married everything you'd hope a teacher to do. So, you know, kudos.
Yeah,
well, thank you. Are we ready to get into this episode today?
Let's do it whenever you're ready.
Alright, so the synopsis for tonight's show is this: Wesley Crusher visits the Enterprise only to see everyone is behaving strangely on account of an addictive, mind-controlling video game. This is the sixth episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date is October 28, 1991. It was written by Susan Sackett, Fred Bronson, and Brannon Braga, and directed by Corey Allen. Guest stars include Ashley Judd as Robin Leffler, Catherine Moffat as Etana, Patty Yasutake as Alyssa Ogawa, Will Wheaton as Wesley Crusher, Cole Meany as Miles O'Brien, Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer, and unnamed actors as random grunting people in the background.
Oh, there were grunts, were they?
Oh, they were grunts.
Oh. Groaning. Random groaners in the background. This game is so sexual and ridiculous that I can't even... Oh, man. Man.
Yeah. All right, so what are your initial thoughts?
Where did this people get a Ferengi sex game? Did those things that came up out of the ground, the holes that the pizza tins went into, did they not look like ear holes to you?
I thought you were going somewhere else, to be honest.
Come on, I gotta see this again.
They would pop up out, and they kind of look like all those diagrams of ear holes. And so I was like, this is obviously meant to be sexual, but those look more like ear holes than...
I don't see that.
It's just a funnel, right? It's
yeah,
nothing
funnel, more than yeah, a funnel, essentially. Yeah. Which your ear is just a funnel. Yeah. If you look at the diagrams...
Many things are just funnels.
Well, yes. Yes, including what they probably meant it to be. But
it's not getting umox. I mean, it's just little
disc. Oh, that gets an umox.
They're definitely getting umox.
Oh, yeah, definitely getting umox.
And Jamaharan. Yes. And Shaka when the walls fell.
When the walls are the... Never mind. So what do you guys say? I mean, obviously for 1991, what do you think of the playing field? It looks a little, you know, plain.
Like something out of the 80s.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Tron.
Yeah. Yeah. Like a little disc going into the little... But it's just amazing what kind of reaction you get from this game. But what's funny is that we have no idea up until halfway point through the episode of what the game's real intent is. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, because that scene in the middle with Wesley coming in on his mom playing it was about the creepiest thing I've seen in all of Star Trek, I think.
Okay, so which one's worse? Wesley coming in on his mom playing it, or his mom then coming in on him later pretending to play it?
Because with the girl on his bed, and they're like, yeah. Oh man, yeah, no, the whole thing's weird. I think it's weirder that he walks in on mom doing it, but the whole thing's weird. Everything's weird.
He had a girl on his bed, and they were even shaking and vibrating and making little noises, but all because they were pretending to play the game. That was hilarious.
Lou, don't you worry. You're gonna walk in on your daughter at some point with a point on her bed.
I will shoot a young man.
Will you? So I kind of agree with you. I think it's worse to walk in on your mom.
I ain't even gonna go there because I'm not looking. Yeah, never mind. There's some. Yeah, I haven't walked in on her, but that doesn't mean anything. So, get me started. Commander Riker is on Ryza.
Dude, and you haven't asked everyone what they thought about the episode yet.
Oh, that's what I was saying. Commander Riker's on Ryza. He's snogging a woman, which is pretty obvious. But what he brings back as souvenirs is amazing. Stupid, but amazing. What about you, James?
I'm not entirely following here. But if I think we're at where I think we are, I like this episode more than I thought I was going to upon rewatching. I'm going to defend Wesley in this. I don't think Wesley does anything wrong at all. I think Wesley's great. And I think it's a little bit of a nice romp. Pun not intended. But it's a bit of a silly episode. Nice Wesley romp.
You like Wesley's romp? What?
I think Wesley does well in this episode. He comes back. You know, he got sent away. Everyone hated him. He then comes back for 1 week. And he kind of helps solve a little bit of a problem. And then he obviously bumps into Ashley Judd. What's not to love?
First it's a romp, then it's a bum. What do you like more? I like Leffler's bum myself, personally.
I didn't say bum, I said bump.
Oh, bump. Okay. Alright. So as I was saying that I had to change this for, Riker's on Ryza, and of course, what does he do there?
Really like this episode.
But yeah, I thought you already told us.
I don't think we ever did the do you like the episode thing yet. Anyway,
I said what were your initial thoughts, and I thought that's what you did. Hey, I know I can listen to this episode and not make the same screw up I did on the last episode.
No, don't edit any of this out. This is all good stuff. No, I think the episode's a 5-star episode all the way. Bam, bam.
Yeah. Oh, don't say 5-star. That's gonna put me under pressure.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. I'm not gonna grade it until the end. But yeah, no, it's good. It's fun. Silly, yeah. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I'll leave all this. Brody. I'll leave all this in. Unlike our last episode, where I left stuff in that I shouldn't have, and I apologize to people for that. But I did get rid of it, and only 83 downloads occurred on that episode. So hopefully, a lot of them are podcatchers. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, it's a good thing. I left a couple things in that I shouldn't have, but you know, if you heard it, feel some sympathy for the people involved. If not, we won't be talking about it. So, Commander Riker's on Ryza, and of course, as normal, he finds himself a woman.
Okay, I find this scene the worst scene of the entire episode. This is a teaser. For a start, I don't need to be teased by Riker trying to catch a woman in her nightie. I don't need it. And I don't particularly think that the ladies watching are going, oh yeah, Riker, you go and get her. I don't know who this is for, except for perhaps Jonathan Frakes to keep in the, to keep in his promo reel of, yes, I can be, I can be a young sexy stud. Yeah. I find this so creepy and off-putting.
Especially with her nibbling on his ear. I just saw that just now and go, oh, God, that's not good. That's not right. But, yeah, he's chasing her around the room with his comm badge. I need that. Give me that. I'm going to come get you, bitch. What the hell did you just do? So, yeah, it's a pretty good turn.
I don't hate it, but I fully agree that it's ridiculous and unnecessary. I think that you could start it without the jaunty running around at each other and just start with her kind of laying on his back and like rubbing his back or whatever and nibbling at his ears, as you say. You don't need the, I'm going to chase you around the room. But I guess that's to show that these people are... I don't know what it's to show. It's just weird.
Things if this is a way of, you know, obviously throughout the episode, Riker has to convince various members of the crew to play quote unquote the game in order for him to be, you know, to be turned. Now, the truth of the matter is that Riker doesn't need convincing. You know, a woman would go up to him and go, "Hey, would you like some of this?" And as long as she's, you know, she has pretty much everything in the right place, he'll go, "Sure." So there's no convincing that needs to go on here, right? If anything, I would imagine that by the end of this, the woman was kicking Riker off and telling him to go back to the ship because he's now fed up of him. So it then just becomes a bit of gentle titillation, and I thought it was just silly and ridiculous.
Yes, Riker was lured into the window of this van with a little bit of candy. Or something like that.
Yeah, Yeah. Anyway, bad scene notwithstanding.
Yeah. Do you guys think anybody has developed that into a real game?
Yeah, I do, in fact. And I see them on the tube every morning as they're sitting there trying to line up sweets so that they get like a random win of stuff. I think it's called Candy Crush or something.
Oh, okay. I've never played that game, so I don't know.
Oh, it's actually practically the same, right? When they were talking about that, you know, A, you have no control over it, you have to let go, and you have to do mindless activity. That's pretty much Candy Crush.
Okay.
Now, actually, is this a good point to ask? Is this a critique of the computer games industry? Or do you think this has just happened to be a device under which they want to pin a story? And they're not really saying anything deeper about computer games.
No. If they are saying something deeper, they don't drive it home. Mm-mm. But I can see how someone would watch this and get a little hint of that message.
And actually, I think that watching it in the past, I used to think it was more of an anti-video games kind of story. And watching it now, it seems so ridiculous that... It doesn't seem to hit home on any of the main, you know, the main things that you might describe as the potential pitfalls of being too engaged in a kind of, you know, like either a phone based existence or like an online existence. It doesn't really hit that. So I feel that if there was ever a kind of a slightly satirical edge to it, I think it's completely disappeared over the last 25 years.
No, I don't think the game had anything to do with this. It was just a vehicle they used to control someone's mind. I mean, she could have spiked his lemonade and did the same thing.
But he wouldn't have taken it and spread it like a viral disease.
Oh, this lemonade is so good. You guys have got to try this. I'll put it in the replicator. Just ask for Wrecker's Lemonade 1.
Fair point.
You know, I mean, it could there have it happened is. Either way.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, everybody I think on the bridge, here's a glass of lemonade. You're going to love this. Here's a glass of lemonade. So, I mean...
That's a good point. The game's consequential. It doesn't really matter. It could be.
Yeah.
But Data could have had the lemonade, I suppose. So you needed something that wouldn't affect Data.
He could have had it, but he... I don't know. Maybe it wouldn't really affect him because his body doesn't process it the same way. I mean, yeah, you still could have played it the same matter. Way.
And yeah. Actually, one of the things that you do have, right, you've got the entirety of the crew... falling over, and they first hit Troy, and I wonder whether or not they first hit Troy because Troy would be able to sense that something was wrong and people were like, you know, losing control or there was an outside influence. I suspect that that's given the writers too much credit, considering that they almost completely forgot that Troy is an empath and, you know, has these abilities. But you wonder whether or not across the entirety of the ship there's no one that would be immune to this. You know, would we really be able to have this game being played by everyone and everyone would react in the same way? And no one would, you know, when half the crew are sitting there intent forward, going and staring into middle distance, no one would kind of think, well, that's a bit weird.
They do at first, but then they think, well, I want to try that too. As far as Troy, I don't necessarily know she would have picked up anything because I got the impression that all of this was happening on a subconscious level, that Riker wasn't really actively engaged in taking over the ship and getting people addicted. I think it just became part of him. I got that impression. Either that or they hit it very, very well. And since, you know, she knows him and he knows how to act around her, he's the only one that's addicted at this time, affected. So, yeah, get her out of the way and then go on to Data.
But they do actively go after. They do have, like, rational thought, right? They do specifically take out the senior members. They do query. And then, you know, if they get pushed back, they try again later. They do take out Data, who is a threat. So it's strange. It seems like they do have control. And also, they know who the woman is. And, you know, Picard acts halfway, you know, towards the end of the episode. He nods along as he's hearing Wesley's concerns,
yeah,
and then just turns around. So it does seem like they have turned rather than it's something underneath that is controlling them.
And they have functional knowledge of, like, who on the ship is turned already.
Yes, yeah.
Which is intriguing. So,
well, I think what Wesley does wrong in this episode, he does a couple good things. One is make up the mock-ups. I know we're jumping ahead quite a bit, but he makes some mock-ups, and, you know, that is pretty smart. He then went later on and wasn't wearing them. He's just carrying them around. They're both carrying them around. And I think it'd be pretty easy for the bad guys to figure out that this doesn't look right at all. They should have kept them on and been reacting just like everybody else.
And I think what you run into here is that, and whether it's, you know, whether it's they're thinking too little of the audience. I just think that they're doing this so that the audience doesn't sit there and go, oh, now it's Wesley. You know, why is Wesley acting differently? Why is he able to overcome the fact that he's got these glasses on? So I thought they were just, you know, basically they have to have them in the hand so that people didn't get confused at home. But I do think that clearly it's the obvious thing to do, right? You should disguise yourself. You should make it, you know, because towards the end, these guys are clearly just wandering around, doing things, sticking out like a sore thumb, and are clearly not under the influence.
Here we go. Okay, ready? Next week, as we review episode 7.
You're so funny. Hilarious. That's
Unification Part 1.
What? Dude, I know you've done this at least twice to Chris himself.
At least twice to me. Because I have to step away at some point when we do these midday ones because my kids are crazy and my wife's always coming in and saying, can you do this real fast?
All right.
I mean, it's always great. And I love that you're going to leave this one in this week. Because usually you cut it out.
Yeah, well, James, I still don't believe you gave this a rating you did. It's amazing, but whatever.
Incredible.
So, Chris, so we have you on again for the Masterpiece Society.
Hey. If y'all wrap that up that fast, this is going to be your fastest episode ever.
Yes, definitely would be. Well, hey, no, we're at 37 minutes. Yeah, it is going to be the fastest episode ever. That's funny.
Where are these 25-minute review episodes, Lou, that we were promised?
I don't know. It's bait and switch, man. Okay, so let's see here. The ship is heading toward the Phoenix Cluster. It's probably going to be hot there, too, to explore a new region.
Okay, I have a problem with Picard's log, because Picard's log says that, oh, Commander Riker has just gone back from Ryza. Mm-hmm. Why is that important in the log? I mean, do you ever have to, like, keep a log at work? Or you have to kind of keep a note of things as part of your professional life? You never write into it, oh yeah, Steve got back to work today. Went to Las Vegas. It just doesn't happen. It's not relevant.
No. Well, maybe that's different because of the nature of what they do and sending people to planets and potentially losing people and beaming or whatever. So maybe it's like a thing that they have to do at that point that we would never have to do now. And maybe you're not the guy who... That's weird that the captain is the one who notes that. But maybe he only does it for the first officer. Well, can you imagine if he had to note, like, Ensign Foldover, who works down on Deck 27?
She's back from Ryza. Lord knows what she's brought back with her. So I have made Dr. Crusher aware of the situation. I mean, is that what it basically is here?
Yeah.
That would be strange if the captain is sitting in his quarters doing that all day.
Yeah. Or
caught about 27 venereal diseases down there on Ryza. Goodness.
To Commander Riker's back from, you know, back from Ryza. He was out partying. He's going to have a rough morning for the rest of the week. It's a little silly. Anyway, lots of...
And this is our first, or no, this is our second time with Robin Loeffler, right?
Yes. Really? Last, right? Yeah, she was on Darmok, right? Or she was on an episode I was on recently.
Yeah, she Darmok. Was. Yeah, there she was, yeah. And I like the way that Geordi goes, oh, Commander Riker, Ensign Loeffler? And he goes, yes, I do. And you think, she must be half your age. Get away from her.
Hey, it's all fair game to Riker.
That's right.
I mean,
half his age, not quite female, maybe
is
male.
Is he really missing Ryza that much?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sure Riker's already given her the tour of the ship.
Do you think that Riker has a holodeck program for any of these people who won't bed with him? Like, do you think he's... Is he that shady? And
I think he's got a little bit too much respect for that, I would imagine.
Okay. That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
But not much. But
sometimes you wonder.
But Geordi, on the other hand, he certainly has, like, you know, he has a record button in his visor as he wanders around the ship.
Is there full question. Vitals, everything, and just like, I'm going to log that into the...
Well, I mean, so doesn't it surprise you that the only dude that ends up going and having a relationship with a hologram is a guy that actually has the kind of the full body scanner attached to his eyes?
I just wonder how much Quark would pay for his visor. Like... If he has all these chicks, like, dialing it into his visor, how much would Quark pay for that? How much would that go for in the black market? Maybe Geordi gets on eBay every now and again, and he's just like, anybody want to buy this visor? It's got 1,000, you know, females who were in and out of the Enterprise here for the past few months. So anything you could dream up.
And I got close to four of them.
You want Luoxana Troi's specs? Right here in the visor, Bo. I'll sell it right to you. Right. Anyway, sorry. This is ludicrous. Hopefully none of this actually happened. Crimes.
Never know. You never know. I mean, once in a while, Geordi might say, Ensign, seriously, a thong? Those are so gone. They'll change. Yeah, I can imagine that. I mean, he does peek at the cards, only after the hand is dealt. Bullshit. Anyway, so... Wesley ends up in engineering is confronted by some new laws on the ship. Loeffler's laws. 102 of them. How many laws do you think you can remember?
One.
Yeah. And I think it's never in the 90s. What? Chris?
So never talk about Fight Club.
Never talk about Fight Club, yeah, right. I think somewhere in the 90s was Watch Your Back. Did it really have to go that high? Watch Your Back? That should be like number two or three.
Okay, I have a big problem with Loeffler's laws. Firstly, I think they're all stupid. Yeah. But secondly, you have one specific law that she mentions, which I kind of think negate or at least encompass all of the other laws, right? She's got one that says you got to go with what works. But do you need any other laws? You don't need any other laws if you've got that one, right? It's like, watch your back. Well, if it works, then that's encompassed within you got to go with what works. So I challenge you to find another law that's not encompassed within that you got to go with what works.
I imagine, good doctor, that this 19-year-old girl who's just recently got a posting on the greatest starship in the planet will look back on these laws in 10 years and she'll say, yeah, that was pretty stupid. And they could all be boiled down to this one law. And Leffler's laws will become much shorter at that point in time. But at 19, I think this makes sense for her. So I'm okay with it for this character at this moment in time.
Is she only 19? She must be older than 19, right?
I imagine she's between 19 and 22. That's my guess.
I mean, maybe 22, because she's out of the academy.
And either way, she's young enough to have not like crossed that threshold of looking back on things that you've done or created and really seeing them for what they are, if that makes sense.
Yeah, in other words, they're making her just a little kid who does kid things.
I don't know that they're making her a kid or even a teen, but like she's still not fully mature, I would argue. But I feel like I wasn't fully mature until probably 27, 28 when I was a couple years into my first kid and I was doing my job and I finally realized, you know what, I'm grown. And I looked back at all the stuff that I wrote and did from that time period when I was young, and then it all looks kind of stupid to me now. But at the time, it was my whole life, you know? So it mattered to me.
Right. Well, this is a strange thing. My internet's down, but yet I'm still talking to you guys, so apparently something's working.
Your internet isn't down, not yet.
I can't be down. I mean, I can't go to a webpage. I was going to try and look up and see if somebody ever expanded Leffler's laws.
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of
fanfiction. A book on that. Not even fan fiction. I bet something's been printed in actual Star Trek fan fiction.
Doesn't Leffler end up in the books? The post-TNG books? I seem to recall having listened to a 10-4 where they discussed this.
Yeah, I think she is. I'm pretty sure she is.
I don't read the books myself.
Okay. I quite enjoy a lot of them. In fact, I'm about to start reading... This is kind of a rabbit trail, sorry. We can get back to the actual episode. But I'm about to start reading this, Doctor. Do you see that right there?
I do.
Read the title to the fans.
Well, actually, I can't see... I can only see half of it, but it's Star Trek Next Generation. And it's a crossover with the X-Men.
They go to Planet X. Isn't that great? Oh, nice. Somebody wrote this. 200 pages of Star Trek visits Planet X with the X-Men. I'm going to read it, and I'm going to tell everyone about it. Because I bet it's amazing.
To be honest with you, the amazing thing is that someone wrote it and then someone was probably paid for it as well.
Yeah.
So, imagine going through college thinking that's the job you can land afterwards.
So who do you think AF is?
Okay, can I just, before we... you're jumping far too far ahead. But...
Not really.
I hate Boothby. This is the second time that Boothby has come up, and I already hate him. And I know that we're going to see more Boothby, and I still hate Boothby. I hate him.
Well,
okay, carry on.
You're not going to get out of it that easy. Why? He's a sweet little old crotchety old man.
Okay, he represents something that I think is really bad, which is this idea that there are people who are completely connected to, you know, every single major event that's ever gone in history. And I think that's the main objection I have to Boothby. So the idea that he is known to Picard and to Janeway, and he was Chakotay's boxing instructor, and he happened to be chosen when Species 8472 turned up and they needed to put... It's all just nonsense. The truth of the matter is that when Picard was at the Academy, the guy that was the groundskeeper was probably sacked a few months afterwards for kind of running after some of the girls that were at the Academy. I think that the way that they try to make this the story, or they try to have so many stories overlay on top of each other that make like the one central person in charge of everything. I get really frustrated by that. I like the fact that in this episode, Picard had made a big thing about Boothby, and then Wesley goes, "Nah, he didn't remember you." I think that's correct. I think that's true, and that's where they should have gone. But then they start pushing this as Boothby basically runs the Federation from his garden patch. And I get frustrated by that kind of lazy writing.
The all-knowing Boothby. I wonder if he's an alien of some kind.
627461. What was the number?
Species? I said 8472.
8472.
I don't know if that's the actual number or that's my PIN for my bank card. please don't try it if you find
it. Now we know.
Yeah. Next time we see you in Las Vegas, I'm going to pick your pocket, take the card, and run to the ATM. See how many pounds I can get out.
Okay, can I have a couple of quick fire things? Because we skipped it. One, Troy enjoys chocolate too much. We'll leave that one there. Data, when they bring on Wesley and they take him to the observation lounge and they kind of do the rib on him a little bit and they make him a little bit uncomfortable, and then Data goes up and asks him whether or not he was uncomfortable, and then everyone laughs, and then Data goes and he does this like nervous laugh for like a third of a second. It's fantastic. And right. The way that Brent Spiner acts that particular scene out gives me no end of joy. It's one of those classic Dataisms, and we come across this again in Starship Mine when he's having to talk to Hutch. Brent Spiner's great at this, and I really enjoyed that that little before carrying on the discussion. Anyway, that's it.
Carry on.
Do you know what? I reckon that Lou's gone. Oh, yeah, there he is. Yeah, it was very, 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 very still.
I want to see if I can get Chris that time. You know, Lou's frozen.
Nope. Never get me. Ever.
All right. I'll keep trying. So, Dr. Crusher. Okay, am I going too far if I say Dr. Crusher calls Data to sickbay?
Let me just check
notes. I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
Yeah, because that is what happened. I just want to make sure I'm not jumping too far ahead. Because we've been bouncing around this entire episode.
Now, hang on, now that's okay. The only other point I was going to suggest is that doesn't your neutrinos are drifting? Doesn't that sound like a great, not a chat up line, but a way of fighting off the nerds as they're coming onto you? So I think every young lady out there that's trying to make sure that she's not hit upon when she attends Star Trek Las Vegas should make sure that she has that one in her back pocket.
Yeah, your neutrinos are drifting. Oh my god!
Great line. No. Probably the best line in the entire episode and kind of interaction is that. I love that whole interaction.
Yeah.
No, that good. That good. And I actually think that both Wesley Crusher and Robin Leffler, that interaction carries the episode. And I think they do really well. I have questions about whether or not they should have allowed Leffler to fall at the end and to be captured. I don't think they needed to. I know it adds a little bit of tension coming up, but you could have also had it by both of them being caught at the same time. I wish
she would have stayed pure. I wish that she would not have fallen to it. And I was almost hoping, like, because there's a point where I thought, as he was running the first time I watched this episode, as he was running away, I thought maybe she's gonna catch him somewhere. Like maybe she's gonna say, "I was faking back there, but like they got me and they put it on me and I was able to do whatever." But once he realized that they caught Wesley and they put it on his head physically and forced his eyes open, that's when I became okay with the Leffler thing. As I thought about it. Because they must have forced it on her.
I think they have to catch both of them. I don't think this works with, like, you know, Wesley not being caught in the end, but I would have loved to have found a way of keeping them, you know, both in the game or both more connected.
A little longer, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, by all means, you could have had that they got separated, that Wesley ends up running to the bridge, that he gets captured, and then Data comes in and makes the save at the end, and you don't know what happened to Leffler. But I just think that the character's such a good character and really bounces off well with Wesley throughout the episode, and it's not a character that needs to needs to be saved or needs to be kind of written out early. Now, they don't do it early, but I'd rather them not have done it at all.
Okay. Well, what I've found interesting about it is Crusher actually calls Data to sickbay. At the time, he's standing right next to Geordi. And when he gets there, she knocks him out. She obviously, hits his off switch, then starts cutting some wires on him. And then says, I don't know what happened to him. He just came walking in here complaining of a servo malfunction. At that point, you know Geordi's incompetent. Because I would have said, whoa, wait a second. Did he actually come in on his own, or did you call for him?
And also, Geordi in the past has been very clear that he can tell when people are lying. Because their heart rate goes up and they start sweating and all of that stuff. So I think that, I think that you are right to nitpick here. Having said this, let me just say one thing that I like about the episode so far, and that is that Riker has taken over some of the crew. He has gone after Geordi and been pushed back. He went after Troy. Troy went after Beverly. And it's only now that you actually see that those attempts were successful. And indeed, they're now beginning to spread their malice or whatever it happens to be. I like the way that it's subtly referred to throughout the first, maybe third or quarter of the episode, without you really knowing whether or not, A, has Riker turned, B, was he successful in getting Troy and Crusher? And you kind of think he must have been because of the chatter, but I like the fact that it's slightly ambiguous up until this moment where they effectively have to take out Data, and when they do, it's very, very clear who's on their side.
Okay, but I don't know. It just seemed like Geordi should have at least caught that she's the one that called him, not the other way around. But again, like you said, he could tell if somebody's lying. That's why I still believe that this game may have been a subconscious until everyone was done, and then it could come out. Because, I mean, I could imagine on Ryza, after he was afflicted, he's going to say, Deanna's going to catch me. There's no way she's going to not know what I'm going through here.
And then he'll have a think about it a bit more and then think, actually, no, man, I'm probably wrong. She'll probably not figure it out at all because she never realized when the captain had been taken over by aliens 4 times in the past.
So, Wesley's birthmark. Obviously, it's somewhere in the underwear region because she. Later, Leffler's folding his underwear. That's really weird. That was kind of bizarre. And she says something about it hiding his birthmark.
Very strange. Extremely strange. But. No, it's just strange. There's no but. It's just weird. They have not been dating that long. It would be one thing if they had shown that they had some kind of relationship long distance before this episode, but for this to just be like a one-day relationship or two-day relationship or however long it was, a week even, nah. Like, that's a ludicrous thing. Except that it's a callback to a prior scene, I believe, so it's not like she's actually seen his birthmark, so I guess in that way, you just see it as a callback and a little in joke, and you let it go, which is what I do because I don't want to think about how weird it is.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see.
Now, let me mention one thing, and I hope that I'm not going to make a mortal enemy out of Chris here. But do they really need creative writing at the Academy?
Yes.
Really? I mean, everyone always talks about how they failed, warp field theory and, exobiology. Are we really led to believe that there's also a creative writing course at the Academy? That to me sounds a bit weird.
I believe there is a creative writing class because you need creativity to come out of some of these situations. Boom.
Drop the mic.
Think about how many times Picard has had to come up with a creative solution. If he had to have creative writing, he never would have gotten the tools and skills he needed to solve Darmok or get out of the crystalline entity's grasp or leave from that weird face alien that was just like a black mat over some eyes and a mouth in the first season.
Or beat
the jellyfish monster in the very first episode.
And Picard
would have never been able to defeat those things without his creative writing class. Go take creative writing, people. You can defeat space aliens.
And his love would never have been a fever, longing for that which longed to nurse with the disease.
Yes, okay, fine.
And he would have never been able to play
Tempest. I accept that one, Blue. I accept that one.
Yeah.
I just have a hard time imagining like a young Geordi or a young Riker sitting there writing out essays on creative stories or anything like that.
Riker mostly liked to write illicit poetry. I'm going to go ahead and put that in his backstory. Mostly wrote hypersexualized poetry.
I mean, but do they also have like interpretive dance and stuff like that at the Academy as well?
Maybe. Why are you hating?
Sadie Hawkins.
I'm just wondering, that's all. It's like all of the... A lot of the stuff on the Academy seems to be at least slanted towards the sciences. Now, obviously, there's also diplomacy and history and stuff as well that needs to be studied. But it just took me back a little bit when they mentioned that they have creative writing.
Well, ultimately, this comes to an actual real argument. We've been joking, but this comes to a real argument, right? Like, what place does humanities play when the world is more and more going into a kind of scientific, empirical realm? Like, what do you really need those things for? But I believe, you know, you need both. You look at most of the early scientists, and they were all guys who wrote interesting things. Like, they wrote more than just their scientific things. So I feel like you need the humanities to build your sense of morality and your sense of philosophy and your sense of purpose and being and all that, as well as the sciences to build your senses in the logical and in the physical. So I really think you need a balance of both, and you need a good education in both to be a fully formed human being. And I think that, you know, you would agree with that, Dr. James, on almost every level. So I wonder why you butt up against the fact that they would have a creative writing as much as you do. Because, I mean, in your own experience, you've done all those things, and you decided to focus in the logical, you know, and not the humanities. But I think that's what makes us human, is the fact that we have both of these sides. We have this illogical feeling, emotion side, and we also have this logical, mathematical, real world side. So, I mean, both are equally important, I think, in the human life and in the human psyche. And you have to kind of feed both dogs, so to speak.
Okay, so I kind of agree. I do kind of agree. But there are a couple of things that are perhaps clouding my position here. One is that I've always considered the Starfleet Academy to be pretty much like, you know, quote unquote university or, you know, space university of the future. And as a result, it being UK based, being, you know, having gone to an English university, we actually have an extremely narrow university curriculum. So we don't have, you know, majoring in this and minoring in that or whatever you guys have in the US. We certainly don't have that broader subjects that are studied. So the last time I did anything on the humanities side, it would have been when I was 16. So after 16, you then go to, you know, high school or what we call college here. You'll do the sciences, you'll then do sciences at degree, and you'll end up doing a PhD in sciences. So very quickly, the last like 9 years of my education didn't touch any humanities, let alone any like arts whatsoever. So from that perspective, I think maybe my experience is a little bit more skewed. But I always do find it strange that whenever they reference Starfleet Academy in Star Trek, they will always mention how they fluffed, you know, whatever, X, Y, or Z. And they'll always bring up some kind of, even if it's not like a hard science, they always bring up something that sounds like a hard science. So like the I failed a warp field theory, or I failed, you know, invent whatever science you want and make it sound hard. And as a result, now that they mentioned about the creative writing course, I can also now think about, you know, B'Elanna, you know, spiraling out the academy because she failed her music, or, you know, someone else having failed because they didn't have their pottery class up to spec or whatever. I just felt that, in my mind's eye at least, I always felt that it was a much more rigorous kind of like scientific education. Now, maybe a lot of people have referenced like Starfleet Academy to be pretty much like how you would enlist as an officer in the armed forces. Now, do they have creative writing in if you want to be an officer in the army?
I would imagine that these are electives, like creative writing, music, those types of things are probably going to be electives, but you have to have some type of elective in the humanities is what I would guess. So,
I mean, I know
that, I mean, that's how it works in most things now. I assume it would be similar then. So like creative writing is just what she chose as her elective and failed out of it or whatever.
I mean, I would be really keen to know if people that are on the path to be officers within any of the armed forces, if they have electives in creative writing, I'd be genuinely interested in that.
That'd be interesting, yeah. And if this is a strictly military organization, then maybe what you're saying is absolutely right. But you know, maybe the actual officers and not just the enlisted men have to take creative writing or some sort of thing like that. I would imagine because it does make them more well-rounded. You know, maybe they have to take a course in Shakespeare because it makes them more well-rounded or makes them more worldly, or, you know, I mean, it serves some purpose that is actionable.
Actually, let me just apologize here for anyone else that did do, you know, either the arts or humanities at a university or throughout their life or have an interest in that, because I did pick on creative writing, but I could have also picked on Latin, right?
Right.
Now, why the hell are they studying Latin at Starfleet Academy? That seems a bit strange. That's probably worse, right, than creative writing. Well, it seems not worse. Worse is me like putting too many overtones of my like, you know, anti-humanities bias on it. But at least it seems less useful when piloting a starship to have any knowledge of Latin.
But you're going to do more than pilot a starship on this, right?
Well, you're also going to have a good go on the pub quiz, or what? where would it come up?
I mean, maybe, I don't know.
And
I mean,
by the way, you're probably right. I don't want anyone to call in and say, well, you know, a lot of scientific and medical names derive from Latin. Sure, of course. But you don't learn Greek just because you have the Greek alphabet in play for algebra. So anyway, I'm happy to move on. I don't want to be a pain today.
Too late. Yeah. Now you're my mortal enemy and a pain.
Okay. So anyway, where were we? I don't know. Wesley and Leffler, Robin that is, decide they're going to try and find out what this game is, and they hook it up to a computer. But here's the thing I was wondering about the computer. It said it can mimic reactions in a human, but if I remember, the game doesn't do anything till you get that first disc in. So what if the computer doesn't do that?
Very valid point.
Yeah,
and I'm not too sure if, I mean, they talk about mimicking the, you know, the optical input thing, but is that, are they really going to be able to handle that at the same time as handling, you know, whatever connection it has into the brain? To me, it just seemed a little bit unlikely that they would be able to fully reproduce the input output of a human brain.
Because but another thing is... go on.
Okay, I'm sorry. I really am sorry. I shouldn't be nitpicky, but when Leffler mentions that her parents were the only plasma specialists in the sector, what's that? Why is that? Why can't they have more than two plasma specialists? It's not that tricky to find a plasma specialist. Even nowadays, most universities will have like a department full. Were there not many people in this sector or something? It seems like a strategic misplanning of whichever authorities... Wow. Ran that place.
Why anyway. Is there never a second ship in the area during an emergency?
And actually, while we're at it, because I do have one other thing, is that you see them in 10 forward and they're talking about the game, and just before they head off to investigate it, Wesley goes, "Oh, doesn't this seem a little strange to you?" And Leffler goes, "No, it's just a fad. You'll be gone next week." And I couldn't help but think that was a criticism of the storytelling on TNG, because the truth of the matter is that it was gone next week and no one remembered.
No, that's the way it is. Because it's but remember, I think it's next week for us, but what's it for them?
It's 2 weeks.
Maybe could be the next day. Could be next month. We never know. Okay. So, anyway, like you said earlier, it's time to report their findings to the captain, and surely he's going to stop this madness. And as soon as Wesley, you know, walks out of the ready room, Picard turns around and puts the game on. But why couldn't Wesley see that thing sitting on his desk?
Well, it was behind him, right? And yeah. By the way, I think this scene is fantastic. It gives you everything you need. So you have like a blurred out view of Picard. You hear the bell at the door. You actually see Picard put something down that would actually be behind him. So if you're following on, if you're rewatching the episode, you know that he's already been taken. Right. He then kind of turns around. He has this conversation with Wesley. You can see him take on board everything he needs, and you know that Wesley's kind of bought into it and thinks that he's done the right thing. And then right at the end, he kind of confirms your worst fears that actually, no, Picard is not only has Picard been taken, but then now Picard's onto him. And I remember watching this episode as a young kid and thinking, how are they going to win now because Picard's been taken? And really did feel the fear at this point. So I really love this scene. I think the way it's executed is just perfect.
Yeah. Okay. Chris, is there a new age trekker there?
Yeah, actually, that's a funny question. And as they scream in the background, that's a funny question because he's super into the starships. And I just recently found a half-built Enterprise D model that I was building, and I handed it to him, and he's like, "I want to finish it. I want to work on it." So now we're going to apparently build a Enterprise D model together, or finish building an Enterprise D model together that I got years ago that I never finished. And so that's fun. He's definitely, I think he's going to be a Trek fan one day. Out of all my kids, he's the most likely to be one.
Cool. All right. Alright, so Wesley does figure out that the only person that couldn't be affected by the game is, of course, Data, and he manages to get hurt. What has my mommy done? But I like the fact that they fix Data in the background, but they don't discuss it. You know? It is until the end of the episode that we actually find out the Data has been repaired and saves the day again.
Well, by the way, in a way, it mirrors the takeover as well, right? So you don't know how far the takeover's gone until it's already been done, and you don't know how far they've managed to fix Data until right at the end when actually he's completely fixed and has a solution to the problem. And I think that kind of built up the tension, both in the sense of you not knowing who to trust, you not knowing how far the odds stacked against you, and then you not knowing whether or not Data will be in a position to be able to save the day at the end. So I think they did it very deliberately, and I think it works for the kind of the tension that they're trying to carry in the latter scenes of the episode.
Yeah. So, okay. So I already mentioned that I like the fact that Wesley does the mock-ups. Although they carrying around the game obviously was obvious to other people because they should have had it on their head the whole time. Even as they were walking, that's what people are doing. I'm surprised we didn't see more people bumping into walls. Or how about when Wesley was on the run and those two security guards were, you know, they see that phaser shooting. Why didn't they have theirs on? So, I mean, was everyone on the ship actually under this control?
I think they were, but you can't be wearing it when you're running down the corridor, right? There must be a time and a place.
I don't know, man. At the end, they all seemed to be wearing it and doing whatever. You know, like it wasn't a thing where it was like, we're going to take it off at any point in time. It was they were all wearing it. Except when they get back to the bridge, they all have it off. And they're doing the bidding of that woman. So, that's an interesting question. It's intriguing. I don't know. I don't know that they even thought about that in the writer's room. This was a Brandon Braga episode, after all.
Yeah.
Did you think that when they actually found the woman at the end, and you see her on the view screen for the first time, do you think Picard thought, well, I wonder how she managed to get Riker on side? Do you think it was like a big mystery that he had to think deeply about, or do you think it was pretty clear how he managed to seduce Riker?
Pretty obvious, actually. It didn't take much. She probably sat down on his table one day, and that's what happens.
Feminine wiles.
Yeah. Strange woman in a bar. It's how it starts for Riker. But anyway. So then we find out the real reason for the whole game itself is that woman. Riker was schnogging on Ryza as attempting to take over the Federation. And, of course, the only thing they didn't anticipate was Wesley. Now, do you think maybe if they had waited till next week, or did it the week after, that the entire Federation would have been taken over, but because Wesley was there?
Yeah, so this episode slightly falls into the trap that like a lot of He-Man episodes fall into, which is that you've got a villain, they have this cunning plan that happens not to work because a one in a million chance that someone happened to foil it. And in a way, you should just try the plan again next week because there doesn't seem to be anything that's going to stop them next time. It just happened to be luck that prevented them this time. But we never hear it from these guys again, right? And I assume they ban the game and, you know, other things that can take away your brain and stuff. And, they carry on.
Wow. All right. Thank you.
Bum, bum.
Don't know. Okay, so after leading the crew on a nice little chase throughout the ship, they finally catch Wesley, drag him onto the bridge, hold him down, and then shove that game onto his face. And just as he hits his first score, that's when all the lights go off and Data comes on the bridge with his funky disco strobe light. And in everybody's eyes, and oh, I can't believe what we were about to do. Type of thing goes on again. And we'll see that again later. Can't believe what we're about to do. These people really are gullible sometimes, aren't they?
That's what this whole episode makes me think. Everybody's gullible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Except Wesley.
Or Data. No. Not always. He can... Yeah, I guess. So I guess after the little goodbye kiss, Wesley and Leffler are done forever.
Hang on a second. Well, why? If you wanted to take over the Federation, right? Mm-hmm. And if he had a device that worked on every single member of Starfleet, except Data, why would you try in the first instance to take down the ship that Data was on. That makes no sense. Why would you have started here? Why not start on, you know, the Intrepid and the Endeavor and basically do what they did in Conspiracy and only take out the Enterprise at the end? Because they were mentioned and they were going to send the guys from the Enterprise to various other star bases, and it seems really unfortunate that they went onto the one ship with Data on.
Power corrupts, absolutely.
Yeah, they didn't.
They had this power, and they said, we're going to go for the biggest man in the yard.
You think? I mean, they couldn't have started off with Ensign Timmy somewhere?
Oh, they could have.
I would have went to San Francisco, right outside Starfleet Academy, and waited for a few ensigns to come by and seduced them.
Ultimately, that's the problem with this episode, is logically it doesn't really work out. But it doesn't make it any less fun of a romp while you're in it.
You see, there's that word again, romp. It is a romp. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, this is definitely one of those Indiana Jones type just fun things that if you think about too hard, you'd be like, there were about 1,000 things wrong with it. And I'm not saying turn your brain off, because I don't think any of us can do that, but you know, experience it, enjoy it for what it is, recognize its flaws, and move on. I mean, it's just one of those episodes where you can't sit and say, it's not an episode meant to sit and say, this is wonderful art that was created to make me think deeply and do great things. It's not that. It's ridiculousness in a bottle, and you drink it up and you enjoy it, and then you throw the bottle away.
All done. All done. RC Cola's done. So I do understand what you mean. Okay. All right. Well, I can't think of anything else. Did I miss anything? I'm sure I did.
No. I think basically this episode is just saying that it's better to have a nice relationship with Ashley Judd than to stay in your room playing Game Boy. And, you know, who would disagree with that?
This is the truth. If you take anything from this episode, you rewind this back, you listen to what the doc just said, that is the absolute, and any of the Judds, not just Ashley, any of the Judds, truth. Done.
And this was her first acting gig.
I thought we already established she was on Darmok.
Oh, I meant Star Trek was her first acting gig.
No, I'm just putting your leg.
Although, you know, something about her mannerism strikes me as odd. The way she walks, the way her body contorts, and her head flip-flops. And I'm like, this isn't atypical. This isn't typical Starfleet personnel.
That's a fair point. But I got to say this, Lou. When I was 6, 7 years old, I experienced my first crush. My mom was super into the Judds. She had bought the album.
There's an album?
Oh, there's many albums. The Judds were a musical group. They're a country music duo at the time, and Ashley Judd is the younger sister who wasn't... I don't think she's a singer. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But I know that the mom and the daughter sang together for a long time. Anyway, my mom bought the album. I'm in the back of the car. We're riding down to the beach. I'm staring at the album the entire time. Experienced my first crush. Fell in love with the Judds. Super in love. When I found out Ashley Judd was a thing when I was, you know, 9, 10, started looking into that, right? I just fell in love with the whole family. So this was my first super crush, was the Judds. And so she is magnificent in my eyes. And everything that the doc said earlier, 100% true, fully agree with it. I've been on both of Ashley Judd's episodes here, and there's a reason for that. I love her. I love her deeply and dearly. I will not stalk her down because I'm not that kind of dude, but yeah, the Judds are amazing. Love their music, love them. Will always hold in my heart that special place for them because they were my first crush.
All right, then I guess that's it, right?
Woohoo!
Yee!
Final thoughts and ratings? Lou, you go first.
On a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best, you want me to go first, huh? Alright, it's an alright episode. It's pretty good. It has its mainstays, such as Riker getting laid whenever he wants to. The fact that everyone gets so addicted, I mean, all 1,000 people in such a short span of time is really strange, but maybe they should have started with the Ferengi first. Ah, there's something we should have discussed. What would the Ferengi version of this game be like?
Didn't they do that where the Ferengi took over the ship in Rascals? Has that happened yet?
No, that's still to come.
Same exact premise. Anyway, let's keep moving.
Yeah, but how would they have taken over the Ferengi? You know, Umox or something? But, okay. But it makes perfect sense to get Data out of the way. And if only the alien, like I said, had waited till next week, and then, you know, they could have gotten one past the ship. But Wesley was there. He's an unanticipated variable that screws it all up. So Wesley saves the day. It is a good episode. It's a nice little romp, like you said. So I think in the end, it probably is middle of the road, so I'm going to give it a 3. Now, when Chris gets back on, you have to say, what a 1? Why? Okay?
Okay, I will try. But I'm pretty sure you can hear us.
I don't think so. So, all right. And that is that.
What? A 1? Why?
It's just that bad. I just hated it all the way around. Ashley Judd, blah.
You didn't get me. You still didn't get me. Why do you keep trying to get me and you can never get me?
Well, what did I give it?
I have no idea, but you didn't get me with your 1 at the end.
I think it's a 3. It's not all that. You know, it's not the... It's not too much drama. It's silly. And I think that's what they were going for. They weren't going for Shakespeare. They're just going for silly romp. Let's bring back. I do like the fact that he seems a lot more confident. He seems a lot more laid back and relaxed. He looks like he's having a time of his life at the Academy. Let's see what happens in a couple seasons when he absolutely hates the Academy. But until then... It's a pretty good episode. I'll give it a 3. Chris, you want to go next?
No, actually, James is going next. I'm ruling the show right now.
Yeah, I think it's better than a 3. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. It's not a perfect episode, but then it doesn't need to be a perfect episode. I like it a lot. I think that, as I've mentioned, I think that the Wesley character and the Leffler character do very well. I think they carry the show. I think it's a kind of like a rip-roaring romp through this adventure of the week. It's somewhat forgettable, and it also has, I think it has various scenes that are good enough and are significant enough to kind of, you know, make it better than throwaway. So I particularly like the way that the story is structured once you get out of the teaser and Riker's chest hair. And I kind of like, you know, it's a whirlwind of nonsense to a certain extent. I don't think there's anything deep that they're trying to say, but the interactions between Wesley and Leffler are good, and I like the way that they solve the problems in the end. That it's, I think that the tension was built up pretty well throughout the episode, and you don't know how it's going to end. And you know, there we are. It just is a, I think it's a good episode of Trek. That was a very poor roundup, I acknowledge.
It's all right. And how about you, Chris?
I should have done some creative writing at university, I think.
I think you should have taken some creative writing. I agree with that. And since I've taken over this episode, I want you all to note the poeticism, the poeticalness, the poeticary, the poeticary of me using my gaming wiles to rule over Lou and James and go last. I may be the only person to ever go last in their 5 stars. Because this episode is fun. It's tons of fun. And if I gave half stars, I'd give it 4.75, but I don't give half stars, so I have to round. And because I'm rounding, this is a 5-star episode. This episode is fun. It's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense at all. But that's okay, because Wesley Crusher is amazing. Ashley Judd is in the episode. It's ludicrous in its premise, but it delivers. It delivers a chase scene at the end that sees Worf and Riker crawling to chase Wesley to the finish. Yeah. It's amazing. It's just fun. It's ludicrous. It's ridiculous. If you can't just sit back and say, you know what, logically this makes no sense, but it's still fun, then maybe we shouldn't sit at the bar together. And that's okay if you don't want to sit at the bar with me, because I'll still be there. I'll still be drinking. I'll still be having fun with this episode, and it's 5 stars. The end.
Okay, but if we're sitting at the bar together, do not bring up the absence of Zero, or I'm just going to leave again.
Well, I mean, Zero is, it's not really a thing. It's just the absence of a thing.
Well, hang on, I've got more of a problem that even if you could give half stars, you wouldn't be able to give it a 4.75, because that needs a quarter of a star. So I wasn't following that.
Oh, that's fair. I don't give decimal quarter point stars. I don't give quarters, I don't give halves, I don't give anything that falls behind the decimal. I only give full stars. Fair point, James. That's why I took creative writing and you took mathematics. Well, mathematics 1010. I'm basically just trolling James at this point.
Pretty much.
Saying the most ridiculous, ludicrous things I could say.
I did give Night Terrors a 2.1.
I also really want to just screw up your final ratings. Like, at the end, I want you to be able to say, the fans won once again, because, I mean, it was only off by 0.1 this time, but Chris gave this ridiculous episode that deserved a 3, a 5.
It's not a 0.1 this time. Right now, as we're here in 7, or let me recount that. 6 episodes. Yeah, 6 episodes, right?
I was trying to think of a number between 1 and 7 that started with
6.
And really 6 was the only one I could think of.
Yeah. I think, okay, so I am at a 3.86. James, you're at a 3.71. And what? But our guest, yeah, 3.71. And our guest are at 4.43. So, further... No, I'm sorry. Let me redo that. I'm 3.67. You're 3.5. And our guest at 4.33 for the last 6 episodes. Because I think you gave... And I never understood this, James. How can you give Silicon Avatar a 2?
I invite you to re-listen to the show, because you'll find, I'm sure, a thoughtful review. And at this precise moment in time, I haven't got a clue. I can't justify any of this.
I know. I mean, the way we do this, it could have been 2 months ago. So, but anyway. All right, Chris, anything else that you need to discuss? Hey, let's talk about UP2. What's happening?
Yeah, let's talk about UP2. What do you want to talk about?
What's happening UP2's lately?
We're reviewing Deep Space Nine in the order that they were broadcast, and it's fun and amazing.
And so let me go to TrekMate here as I take a look at where we are. Now, James and I started this, 3 years ago? 2 years ago? And you guys started, last year?
No, and we're a year and a half in, I think.
And let's see, our first one went out, season one. I don't remember, it was so long ago. Somewhere in 2014 is what I have. Oh my god, it has been 3 years, James. And you guys are about to pass us.
We're working hard to do that. We're working hard to achieve this mighty goal of being the most prolific episode review show since the Delta Quadrant.
Yeah, yeah. You guys have been pretty good. You know, similar to what the Gamma Quadrant did. I mean, those three were just bam, 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 straight out all the way. And you guys have been very impressive because your last one was, that you have listed, was episode 4 in season 5, Nor the Battle to the Strong. That's what you put out on June 9th. And our last one was Disaster. And believe me, it was a disaster. I put out on June 13th. Is episode 5. So you're one behind us. So I don't know if I could keep this up going. I may have to keep a rivalry.
Well, Lou, we record tonight. Actually, tonight. We record tonight. This same very night. In a couple of hours, I will record. We don't normally record tonight. But I will record with my friends one of the greatest episodes of all of Star Trek. Trials and Tribulations. So I am well prepared for that. Okay. And this was a perfect, this was like the perfect side episode for that. Because like, hey, you're already kind of in a ridiculous Star Trek mood. You're already in a, this Star Trek doesn't mean anything, but it's super fun mood. And then you were like, hey, you want to do the game? I was like, hell yeah. You want to do the game the same day as you're going to record Trials and Tribulations? Hell yeah. Why wouldn't I? These two episodes, in my mind, not on the same level. Trials and Tribulations is like a 10 star. This one is only a 5.
So, Chris, let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Which is better, Trials and Tribulations or The Trouble with Tribbles?
That is a good question. Trials and Tribulations is better.
Because I think it is better as well. I think that The Trouble with Tribbles is great. The, you know, no yes. taking away from it. But what they managed to do with Trials and Tribulations, I think, is something that's super special. It really is very, very good. And it's, yeah, it's, I remember that obviously this was the 30th anniversary, right, of the original series that they yes. were celebrating. And DS9 did this, and Voyager did Flashback.
Hate on Flashback. It was all right. It wasn't great and groundbreaking like that was, but it wasn't bad.
No, but there is a difference, right? There's a, you know, Flashback comes in, you think, yeah, that's a pretty decent, you know, solid attempt at, you know, recognizing the, you know, the history of the original series, and then Trials and Tribulations comes in and you think, actually, we're going to have to rewrite, we're going to have to redo the scale here, because the heights this hits is just really fantastic. I've really always enjoyed this one.
Okay. All right, Chris. So, again, thanks for coming on. Let me see when I have you listed again, the Masterpiece Society.
Am I on for that one? Oh, wow. Yeah. You know what, Lou? You asked me to be on what was the episode that you actually emailed me, because I said it was my favorite episode. Not Data's Day. It's the one where Data's the cowboy and Worf is the cowboy. Stop beating on the door, son.
A fistful of datas.
Yes. Thank you. Fistful of datas. You said that was the one. So the last one we did, not before Darmok, was the last one I was actually contracted to do with you. And then you were like, hey, you want to come on and do Darmok? Heck yeah, I want to come on and do Darmok. And then somehow I picked up 3 episodes in between. I'm really excited about this. I feel like you should just bring me on as a regular guest host, like Colin said. Also, thank you, Colin. By the way, do listen. I meant to post this in the forum. Thank you, Colin, for pointing out where my brain was broken. Christian Slater and River Phoenix, they're the same person in my brain. And I don't know why I couldn't think of that in the moment, but that is exactly why I said River Phoenix, because Christian Slater and River Phoenix are the same in my brain, except one's alive still and one's dead now.
Yeah. Okay, so Masterpiece Society, and then The Perfect Mate.
Yeah, I'm ready. Send me on. Let's go. Cool.
Both of those are terrible.
I'm going to change your mind about both of those, Judge James. Yeah, we're going to take you to creative writing class.
Although, you know, I wonder if Colin wishes he had stuck on for the show, because he was supposed to do this with me, but he had other things he had to do, so it wasn't available. But it would have been interesting to see what Colin would have done for us. But I still enjoy having him on, and we'll talk. Anyway, so thanks again, Chris. So everyone, join us next time. Oh, hey, by the way, Doc.
Oh, go on.
I believe next time that we get together is on Election Day.
It is. It's going to be. It's going to be Election Day. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So what do you think is going to happen versus the popular opinion?
Well, I believe that the current popular opinion is that it's going to be a very easy landslide for the governing Conservative Party. But, you know, my money's on an outside chance that there might actually be a hung parliament and we'll descend into a regime of chaos. But we'll see what happens next week.
Hmm. Regime of chaos. You mean like here in the United States?
Oh, global civil war.
It's about worse. It's worse.
Yeah. I don't know. But at least, you know, your government leaders don't look like they have, you know, this constipation look on their face 24 hours a day.
Careful.
He looks like he's always, ooh, I really need to go bad. But anyway, that's a different story.
A legendary hero is missing in action on a dangerous mission to unite two worlds. And deadly saboteurs threaten their quest to find him.
If we are discovered by the Romulans, it means death for us all.
Now, as the future faces its darkest hour, fate joins together two generations.
I'm looking for Ambassador Spock.
Spock, on the next exciting episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
All right, then. Everyone, join us next time as we review Episode 7 of Season 5, and that's Unification Part 1. And we will have Kiernan McDuff on for that one.
We will.
So everyone, yeah, we will. No, I guarantee you we will.
I also guarantee you we will.
Absolutely guarantee you we will.
Unless you screw up the editing.
Oh, I could always do that. Yeah, maybe I really should. The problem is I hate listening to myself after I record something. So I really do need to learn to listen again. But the only thing I have today is at 34 minutes and 50 seconds, Chris gets up and leaves.
I'm sorry. things happen. Things are happening right now. My room is a chaotic mess.
I bet it is. Yeah. All right. Well, take care, guys. Everyone, take care and good night.
Good night, everyone.
Say good night, Chris.
Good night, Chris.